This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And the Longhorns apparently want to keep their season going because they are one win away from a trip to New York City. Hello again, it's another edition of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com, and it's the Larry Bird podcast. We're up to 33 Droppin' Dimes podcasts. Man, it's been a wild ride doing these podcasts covering this Texas basketball team, which, of course, they'd be one win away from a trip to New York City for the NIT semifinals and maybe even playing for an NIT championship. Texas, most recently in the NIT, played San Diego State at home, then played Xavier at home. They keep winning, and on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. at the Irwin Center, they will host Colorado. The winner gets to go to New York City, keep playing. The loser, their season is done. So, you know, the Longhorns, I guess, give them some credit. They haven't rolled over. They didn't want their season to end. They found a way to win a couple of basketball games, and we'll get into more discussion about those games here in a second. But I kind of want to start with the crowd, because Sunday 3 p.m. game against Xavier. And, you know, you're wondering, it's the NIT, Texas fans, the vocal portion of Texas fans on social media or places like Orange Bloods, they're not in on Shaka Smart right now. For the most part, they're not really in on this team right now. But it was really interesting to me that I think the listed attendance, I guess, for tickets sold was about 3,200, I believe, in Sunday's game. So about 1,000 increase from the South Dakota State game. I'm gonna call them San Diego State at least once during this podcast, so just bear with me. I don't know if I'll pick up on it, but it's South Dakota State, the same SDSU. They both go by that thing, South Dakota State. So the crowd on Sunday was really into the game, like really into it. One of the better home crowds from an energy and noise standpoint all season. And, you know, for the most part, Texas got more than, you know, 3,200 fans in the Irwin Center. I mean, there are some games when they had 8, 9, 10, 11, 12,000 tickets sold or whatever it was. And the whole lower part was mostly filled, and some people in the upper levels as well. But for those, the 3,000 people that were there, it was one of the better home atmospheres of the year. And I can't really put my finger on it. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it was just a different type of fan that was there, because you're not doing the season ticket sales. It's basically, hey, if you want to show up, pay $12 to $14, come show up and watch the game. You know, I don't really know how to describe it. Maybe it's just the diehard fans that were there. I don't know. But even in that Xavier game, it was a really close game. It was one of those games where normally at the Irwin Center, you would start to feel this sort of nervousness, this nervous energy, this anxiety, like, oh no, Texas is going to find a way to lose it again. Like, there'd be more oh no moments, as opposed to more like constant excitement moments, or moments where the home crowd was just trying to rally their guys to a win. And normally, you know, the way that Xavier game played out, that's kind of the way that the arena would feel. But it was not like that at all Sunday. So I don't know if it was just a different type of fan that was there, or maybe the lack of pressure from a fan standpoint. I think fans going into that, you know, if you went there, obviously as a Texas fan, you want Texas to win. But if they lose, yeah, you know, people would be upset. Oh, you know, you lost a game early in NIT. That's embarrassing. But it wouldn't be the end of the world. I mean, the season's kind of, you know, it's already capped at an NIT championship or not. I mean, there's no NCAA tournament, there's no Big 12 tournament, there's no Big 12 regular season, whatever. So perhaps that played a role into it. I'm not sure, but I just was taken aback at just the constant energy the fans provided in that game. I mean, it was from opening tip to final whistle and overtime. There weren't many oh no moments from the crowd. It was constantly, you know, getting loud, getting excited about the game, really enjoying the product that was going on. So I found that really interesting because I also think it plays into this idea that if you're looking at how Texas projects to construct its new arena in the future, and I know a lot of people were – not a lot of people. I think that there were a vocal minority that were kind of upset at Texas capping the attendance, you know, because if Kansas comes to town or you've got a big non-conference game, let's say against somebody like North Carolina who's come to Austin recently, somebody like that, you could fill a stadium with 15 or 16,000 people. You could. But Chris Del Conte's vision for the arena is, you know, he said this a while back, is you don't build a baseball stadium for a weekend series. You build it for a Tuesday game. From the standpoint of, it's better to have a full stadium more often than it is to have a huge stadium that's full only every couple games or something like that. And I think that Sunday's game played into, you know, Del Conte's thinking, and then if you have a smaller venue with more people, it just creates more energy. It creates more of a crowd environment and interaction and impact on the team and all these things. And I want to get to this Shaka Smart quote from the press conference following the Xavier game. And I promise I'll get into the breakdown of these games. Obviously, Texas beat South Dakota State and beat Xavier, or else we wouldn't be talking about Texas playing another game on Wednesday. But I want to get to this Shaka Smart quote about the crowd, and I included this in my Drop a Dimes column after the Xavier game Sunday night at orangebloods.com. So Shaka was asked about the crowd, and he was basically like, thank you for bringing it up. I mean, he's pretty – I don't think he's ever said this directly, but I think he really, really values and in a way gets his team to feed off of the home environment. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in some games where Texas had, you know, awful home losses this year, you know, just you see those guys come out to the floor to a dead arena. And I think, you know, human nature, it plays into those guys' emotions for a little bit. I'm in no way at all excusing some of the awful home losses Texas had this year, like Radford, VCU, Providence, and then TCU at the end of the season. There was definitely a crowd there at TCU. That was just a bad performance by Texas. But I do think that there are times early in the season when Texas would come out on the floor. And I'll never forget coming back. I went and covered the games in Las Vegas. Texas comes back, and they're ranked number 17. It's the highest ranking a Texas team has ever had under Shaka Smart. So they come back home. They're 5-1. They beat North Carolina. They played Michigan State really well, but ran out of gas. And they're hosting Radford at home on a Friday night. And they come out, and the place is dead. There are some people there, but there's no energy. There's no buzz. And you would think that, you know, Texas coming off of that kind of big win, and I know football season was still, you know, finishing and things like that. And, you know, the joke around here is, you know, basketball people start showing up once football ends, and then they go back once football begins spring football. And part of that is the lack of winning basketball as well. But they came out in that game against Radford, a team they should have beat. And it's just, you could see when they walked on the ran onto the floor, it's, I think some of their faces are like, this is it? You know, we're ranked number 17 in the country. We just beat North Carolina. People aren't really excited about what's going on. So I found this quote from Shaka especially interesting when he was asked about the crowd. He said, quote, I thought they were awesome, our crowd. It's a different kind of makeup of crowd because obviously we're in the postseason, but it was great to have everybody down low in the arena. I thought people were really, really loud and boisterous. Our band was terrific as always. That energy at home, let's be honest, home court advantage goes a long way in college basketball, a long way. I would say more so than any other sport in any other level. Today we had one, interestingly enough. The people that came and supported us were terrific. They seemed like they really enjoyed the game. Thankful people came out and hoping they can come one more time Wednesday because regardless, that's our last home game here. And I don't know if that was, I don't think that was a shot because, you know, if you're a head coach that's 4 years into a tenure at a program and you're, you know, basically just over 500, it's hard to fault the fans for not showing up. But I do think that Shaka noticed, and I immediately noticed the same thing, is that even though there were less people there, the energy those people created and just the way they interacted with the game and what was happening was so different. And it made an impact on those players. you constantly saw players on the bench or on the floor throughout the games kind of pumping the crowd up and kind of feeding off that and getting into it, and guys on the bench turning around and looking at the crowd after big plays and things like that. So I don't know. To me, that was just really, really interesting that second game of the NIT on a Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m., the 3,200 people that were there created one of the better home environments I think that we've seen at Texas at some time. And, you know, I would just love – I know they can't do this for TV purposes because it's just too hard logistically to have all the TV cameras and the production stuff and the radio and all these things. But if they were to play games in Gregory Gym occasionally where you've got, what, 4,500 or 5,000 people that can fit into there, those would be some of the best home environments of the season. Just because, like, I'll never forget covering Texas versus Texas A&M at Rice before last season when Hurricane Harvey happened and Texas A&M got together and decided to do an exhibition game to be one of those fundraisers to help the hurricane relief. And Rice's venue probably seated like something like 3,500, 4,000 maybe, but a new arena, great acoustics. Intimate gym. I mean, the fans are pretty much on top of the action. It was one of the loudest college basketball games I've ever been at. And of course, Texas A&M playing into that some, but for an exhibition game before a season amongst, you know, Texas and Texas A&M, two football schools, but obviously have passionate followings and things like that when those two teams get together. So it's, you know, just, I really do think that when Texas looks ahead to its new arena and things like that, I do think the idea of let's fill a smaller capacity more often than a larger capacity just a few times, I think is the way to go if you want your fans to impact what's happening on the floor. And surprisingly, 3,200 fans at the Xavier game on Sunday impacted what was happening on the floor. So again, you're listening to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangeloads.com. This is episode 33, the Larry Bird episode, probably my favorite 33 in basketball ever. And I didn't expect to speak for about 12 minutes on the crowd on Sunday. Who would have thought that would have been the topic we get going on following that game? So Texas beat San Diego. I knew I was going to do it. Texas beat South Dakota State in the first game. They actually got out to a 19-0 start. They were up 19-0 to begin the game. And you knew, just the way Texas has played this season, that South Dakota State was going to make a comeback at some point. Mike Dahlman was really, really good. That guy was as advertised. And South Dakota State could really shoot the basketball. So it was just a matter of time before they got back into the game. They actually took a 65-64 lead. And I think two really important things in that game happened. Dylan Oskakowski took over the game. He was awesome. He was the opposite against Xavier. He pretty much disappeared most of the game. But he was really, really good against South Dakota State, one of his best games at Texas. I think when he saw what Mike Dahm was doing, who's a similar player, I think that he elevated his game. You know, he had a couple of steals, and which led to breakaways, one a dunk, one a foul, and a layup attempt. But really, there was a moment, too, when South Dakota State took the lead, there's either immediate timeout or Texas called a timeout. And Courtney Ramey said, you know, guys weren't immediately being vocal amongst each other. And he basically said, I feel like I need to say something. So he said, quote, let's effing go. And he comes out right after that timeout, hits a three-pointer. He really sparks Texas down the stretch. Matt Coleman finally shows up down the stretch after he had some early foul trouble. So Texas handled its business against a quality South Dakota State team. That's a program that went to the NCAA tournament three straight years before just missing out this year. Had some veteran players, some guys who really could shoot the basketball. So not an easy matchup. And you wondered, how would Texas treat the NIT? And they had a moment where, you know, they came out. They were obviously super interested. They got up 19-0. But then South Dakota State came back. And Texas could have folded and said, ah, you know what? This isn't the NCAA tournament. We're done with this shit. Let's just pack it in and go on next season. But they came back. They found a way to win. Xavier was an interesting matchup because it was one of the first times in a long time I looked out on the floor and I looked at who Xavier had on the floor and just the size, the length, the talent, the skill level. And I thought to myself, how did this team finish where they did in the Big East? You know, as opposed to looking at Texas and saying, Texas should not have the record it has. It should be better than it is. I looked at Xavier and I was like, this group underachieved. I mean, they got some dudes. One of the biggest teams in the country, I think that they're number 22 nationally per KenPom.com in average team height. I mean, they had some big guys, and they were really, really tough on the glass. And give Texas credit, without Jackson Hayes, they were up to the rebounding challenge. Jericho Sims played extremely well. It's funny, this is the second year in a row where there's been an injury to a big man. You know, last year, Mohamed Bamba missed some time to end the season. In this season, obviously, Jackson Hayes, who they said, by the way, after he – I don't think I've said this on a podcast recently. It was reported a few days ago, I believe. But after seeing his second specialist, they confirmed it was a knee, like a deep knee bruise. So obviously great news for Jackson Hayes as it relates to his future. This is not a long-term injury at all. He is going to be out for the rest of the NIT games, but it shouldn't be long before he's fully recovered for that. So this is the second year in a row for Sims that he's basically been looked to say, hey, you're going to have to play a lot. We need you, man. We're missing Mo, or we're missing Jackson. We need you to play a lot of minutes. And it's the second straight time that it's basically unlocked his ability on the floor. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if he just needs to feel wanted or needs to know that he's going to play 30 minutes a game or 25 minutes a game or needs to start. I don't know what it is, but he's been a much better player since Jackson Hayes has been sidelined. And even also he was starting to figure out a little bit more before that, because there were times when Jackson Hayes was in a lot of foul trouble. So the way the Xavier game played out, Texas ended up winning that game 78-76 in overtime. It was wild. And I thought it was a really entertaining college basketball game. And I think that fans of Texas that just fixate on Texas and don't really watch much college basketball as a whole don't really realize that Xavier in Texas was a pretty good college game as it relates to any NCAA basketball game. The NCAA basketball, the product itself in terms of like great teams and great execution and all these things, it's not really out there right now. You can go watch the NCAA tournament, and I guarantee you almost every single time in a late game, a close late game, this happened against LSU Maryland, this happened against Duke Central Florida. The final offense of the game is put the ball in the hands of your best player, especially if it's your guard, your best perimeter player, give him a ball screen and just clear out and let him make a play. That's offense in college basketball. There's not much else to it. So Xavier in Texas was a pretty entertaining college basketball game. And yeah, there were some moments. There was a lot of missed free throws. Kerwin Roach finished 7 of 15 from the foul line. And man, if Texas would have lost that game, that end to his career would have just been, I mean, he falls for the pump fake with about 2.5 seconds left in regulation. Texas was up 70-69. He falls for the pump fake and fouls a shooter. Xavier makes the first and then misses the second following a Texas timeout, and that led to overtime. You know, if he would have lost the game on that, and then in overtime, he goes 1 of 4 down the stretch of the foul line. You know, he had a chance to put Texas up. You know, after he went 1 of 4, Texas was up 78-76. And this was after Sims tipped out his second miss back out to him, and he got fouled with something like 19 seconds left. So if Xavier would have come down and then had an opportunity to tie or win the game, it just would have been I don't think this is cruel to say, but in a lot of ways, it kind of would have summed up his career at Texas. There were some really, really bright flashes. He led the team in scoring. He made some things happen on defense. He had 6 assists. He got to the free throw line 15 times, but he only made 7 free throws. He had the foul at the end of the game. He had some costly turnovers. Like, it kind of would have summed up his career. But Texas found a way to win that game. Final possession in overtime. Texas did a really good job on the inbounds play. Great contest. Went up vertical. Defended it extremely well. And in the end of regulation, Xavier, actually a terrific offensive rebounding team, after the second missed free throw, their big man grabbed the ball and was going to put it back up, but Jericho Sims sprung out of off the floor and blocked it, you know, to basically save the game for Texas. So give Texas some credit that they did make it difficult at times, but they also made a lot of plays. And, you know, their offense down a stretch, Jace Febres had that floater that went down and out. You know, Jericho Sims had a couple of paint looks that just didn't drop. You know, Matt Coleman had a couple of great paint looks that didn't drop. Like, Texas generated some good quality looks. They weren't jacking up bad jumpers late in the clock. They were getting to some good spots on the floor and making some things happen against a team with a ton of size and length. So the main takeaways for me coming out of that game was you kind of saw a glimpse of what Texas could become in the future when you consider how well Courtney Ramey played. He was their spiritual leader again. You know, he got a technical at one point. There were double technicals assessed, and of course Courtney Ramey would be the one to do that. I mean, he's always in the middle of that stuff, man. He plays with that sort of edge, that sort of passion. I think guys feed off that. Jericho Sims had a strong game. Jace Febres had a strong game. Matt Coleman played well on defense, didn't really play well on offense. He's just had a really funky season up and down. You just watch him play, and it just seems like things are just too difficult for him at times. Like he's putting pressure on himself. But he had some moments. You saw a lot of young players that had some positive moments. I mean, Dylan Osikowski basically didn't play down the stretch of the game. I mean, it was all Jericho. Gerald Liddell had some really nice run, especially early on in the game, playing some good defense. So you kind of saw those young players elevate their games and help push Texas to victory. But maybe the most important thing in all of this is it's something I've talked about before on these podcasts about Texas hating losing, just despising losing, and, you know, just a lack of taking pride and ownership in what was happening, you know, taking pride and ownership in season results. And you're seeing Texas take some pride in the way it's finishing its season right now. Again, it would have been easy for them to just roll over and say, yeah, we didn't make the NCAA tournament. We've underachieved all season. Let's, you know, who wants to keep playing? Screw this. They've actually taken some pride in the way they're finishing their season. And we'll see if on Wednesday night they can beat Colorado and then, you know, get a trip to New York City and actually play for a championship, which, I I'm sure many of you are rolling your eyes at the idea of, you know, the NIT or whatever. But for those players, that sort of thing matters, you know, to finish on a high note, to continue playing, to continue to try to get better, to try to win something. I mean, this has been a program that really hasn't won anything in a long time. You know, even going back to, you know, Rick Barnes's final years. I think it would be at least a little bit of a positive, especially for those players, to win something, you know, to win a tournament, to win something that kind of matters, you know, that you're playing on ESPN in late March for a championship of some sort. So, again, Texas, it's inexcusable for Texas not to be in the NCAA tournament. That should have never happened. That should have been a much, much better season than it was. But with an opportunity to keep playing basketball, you are seeing Texas take some pride in what it's doing. And I think that's a positive. As much as we can mock the NIT and, you know, crowd attendance and who Texas is playing and, you know, where it would rank amongst NCAA tournament teams and all these things, there is some pride being shown by Texas. The guys wearing those jerseys are playing with a sense of purpose when, you know, they could have had an opportunity just to pack it in and feel sorry for themselves and say we underachieved and we got to get them next year. And I think it would have been a really big concern for Texas if that's the approach they would have taken, if those guys just would have rolled over and said, nah, we're not really interested in the NIT. Well, guess what? You weren't really interested in winning enough games to get into the NCAA tournament either, you know, when that carrot was hanging out there. So I think it would have been a really poor sign for Texas if they would have got upset in game one and their season would have been done. And instead, they've won two close games against two quality teams. And now they've got a chance to beat Colorado and then go on to New York City and have some fun. I think Texas is having fun playing basketball. I think the fans that were at the Irwin Center had a lot of fun watching Texas play basketball. And, you know, when's the last time we could say that? So, again, you're listening to the Droppin' Knives podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We are up to episode 33. And we'll wrap this thing up with some NCAA tournament talk. I don't think I ever got a chance to give my bracket. You know, there's so much going on with baseball and basketball and everything that I didn't even fill out my bracket to the last minute. And usually I'm a spreadsheet guy. I have all these stats I value in all of these things, and I get super into it, but I just didn't have, you know, enough time to really dive into it. So my final four, I ended up with, and I tweeted this out the first day of the tournament. It's not like I'm making this up. You know, if you do that, you're just a pathetic soul. My final four to end, I actually had all four one seeds, which I don't normally like doing, but Duke, even though it got a real scare from Central Florida, Duke to me was the best team heading into the tournament, and I actually think that their draw in terms of a 2 and a 3 down below was pretty good. Although I talked about this on the last podcast, I faded LSU, faded the meaning. I purposely didn't pick it because I knew the public was going to pick it a lot. I think that it was going to be the most popular 3 seed just because of the talent level. So I faded LSU on purpose. I was a little skeptical about the head coaching thing, how that would matter, how the players would react to that. But the talent is legit, which, insert joke here, why is the talent legit? Huh? Hint, hint. But I faded them on purpose just because I thought the public, that would be a team that they would push through to the Elite Eight to play Duke before the public overwhelmingly had Duke either in the Final Four, playing for a championship, or winning a national championship. But I just couldn't bring myself to not put Duke in the Final Four. They just are so good. And Zion Williamson is just so unbelievable. And, you know, they can shoot. They've got a point guard that can run a team and play great defense. You know, Zion can go get a bucket. RJ Barrett can go get a bucket. Cam Reddish is going to stretch a defense every time it's out there. So I just had a hard time not picking Duke in that bracket. I believe that's the East. Yeah, the East Regional. Obviously, Duke being the number one overall seed would be in the East. Looking down at the West, I thought the West was the hardest one to pick by far. It was a loaded region. You look at, you know, Gonzaga is a very, very legit team, obviously. But even if you go down to that, you know, that 12-4 matchup, which I predicted, Murray State and Florida State, you know, John Morant, and then a Florida State team that barely lost any games in the ACC down the stretch in like the final month. I had Florida State coming out of there to meet Gonzaga, so I got that right. Florida State is really good. They've got a guy in Terrence Mann that can go get buckets. They got a guy in the interior that can go get buckets. They've got a 7'4" guy that can come in and play defense. They got a lot of size and length. Leonard Hamilton always has big guards out there that can go make plays and can make things happen on the defensive end. So that's going to be a super fascinating game between Gonzaga and Florida State. I have Gonzaga coming out of that region, obviously, as a number one seed. And my thought process behind that was the bottom part of that bracket, when you look at Texas Tech, who's awesome. Obviously, I mean, they absolutely kicked the shit out of Buffalo, who's a pretty good team. And then you look at the other part where you had Nevada, Florida, and Michigan. I actually had Nevada beating Florida. Florida beat Nevada. I was surprised Nevada bowed out after one game. I thought for sure those guys, starting 5 seniors, with their ability to score the basketball, would potentially make a little run. But, you know, I was a little worried about Michigan in that second round matchup just because Florida and Nevada are pretty good. And also, you look at Tech and Michigan matching up in the Sweet 16, it's tough to predict who's going to win that basketball game. I had them both getting there, but I picked Gonzaga because I was like, look, Michigan, Tech, or Gonzaga, or even Florida State for that matter, but all those teams could win this region. And who's the most likely to get out of the region based on the matchups? And I think it was Gonzaga, just because Tech and Michigan, to me, is going to be a war. It's going to be a tight game. It's going to go either way. You screw up that pick there, you're losing some points. So I kind of went with the safer route with Gonzaga coming out of that region. And then in the South Regional, I had Virginia coming out. I've said on the last podcast, I don't believe in Virginia style when it comes to the NCAA tournament. I think it's conducive to allowing teams to hang around because Virginia could be grinding you to death and it could only be up like 12 points. And what happens if somebody for the other team gets hot and just makes a bunch of contested shots or, you know, a couple bad breaks here or there, all of a sudden Virginia's lead is down to 4 or something like that. So I'm just not a big fan of that style as it relates to the NCAA tournament. I think it's great for the regular season, but I think it leaves the door open a little too much to be upset in the NCAA tournament. But I picked Virginia to go to the Final Four this season for a couple of reasons. One, I think they're a better team than they were last year. Two, I think the public was going to be off of them because of them losing to a 16 seed last year. So I think the public was going to say, you know what? I can't pick Virginia to go far. They lost to a 16 seed last year. I just can't put them in the Final Four. So I think I could gain up a lot of ground in my bracket pools if Virginia was to come out of that regional because I don't think many people would have predicted Virginia to come out of there just because of what happened last year. So I actually had Tennessee losing its second round game. They almost did. Rick Barnes pulled a move Texas fans know all too well. They were up 25 points against Iowa and almost blew that game while his second best player watched on the bench in the final moments, which he said afterwards, that player said, keep this other guy in. Like, at some point, you'd be like, look, dude, I'm the coach. You're one of the best players in the SEC. We got to get you back on the floor, man. So I had Tennessee losing that second round game just because I thought that there was a real chance they could get upset before they made it to the Sweet 16. They were able to pull it out. I had Purdue coming out of that one. I really, really like Carson Edwards. Purdue's a solid team. I saw them up close when they played Texas. I've actually got Purdue making the Elite Eight and playing Virginia before Virginia advances on to the Final Four. Down in the Midwest Regional, I've got North Carolina coming out of that regional. I was a little bit worried about that potential matchup with Utah State in the second round, but Washington handled them, and then I knew you can't play zone against North Carolina. They're just too good. They got too many shot makers. They're too smart. They're too experienced. Luke May can shoot it. Cameron Johnson can shoot it. Kenny Williams can shoot it. Kobe White can shoot it. They've got some size. They've got some athleticism. They really offensive rebound well. You can't zone North Carolina. And what does Washington do? About as much as anybody in the country, they play zone. So that was a beatdown coming from a mile away. I actually had Auburn losing in the first round to New Mexico State. And hell, it should have happened. My man had that driving layup at the end of regulation to force overtime, and he passed it back out to a guy for a three-pointer who was fouled. Oh, if he takes the layup, overtime is guaranteed. But the guy goes to the free throw line. He only makes one out of three. New Mexico State should have won that basketball game. I had that thing nailed. But unfortunately, that doesn't win you any bracket points when your upset pick ends up blowing the game. Well, not blowing the game, but doesn't capitalize on an opportunity and then loses by 1 point. So I did not have Auburn in the Sweet 16. I actually had New Mexico State because I thought Kansas was just not really that good. And I thought that they were going to bow out early on. So I've got North Carolina going all the way to the Final Four. Down in the bottom part, I actually had I believed in Iowa State too much. I looked at their guards in the way that those guards can make shots late in games and things like that. And I thought that they would actually get to the Sweet 16 and after beating Houston. But Houston's looked legit, man. Say what you want about Kelvin Sampson and his texting and all these things. But they play good basketball. And they're going to meet Kentucky. I have Kentucky actually going to the Elite Eight. But I'd be really worried about Kentucky against Houston if P.J. Washington can't play. P.J. Washington is really the heart and soul of that team. And you saw down the stretch against Wofford, Kentucky just lacked offense. They just don't have a guard that can really go get buckets. And I know they think it's Tyler Harrow, but they didn't run great offense down the stretch against Wofford. In the tight game against Houston, who's really, really good defensively and can take away some things. I mean, I didn't have Houston going to the Sweet 16, but I think Houston's going to beat Kentucky and go on to play North Carolina. But in my bracket, I had Kentucky in the Elite Eight. So there's kind of my thought process around it. I think the most interesting thing of all so far with the NCAA tournament is that in these second round games, so of the 16 games that were played in the second round of the NCAA tournament, the betting favorites won all of them. A perfect 16-0 for the betting favorites in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And how about this? If you go to KenPom.com, one of my favorite sites for college basketball, I've mentioned it all the time on this podcast, and you look at the teams still remaining in the NCAA tournament, it goes 1 through 14. So all 14 of the top teams per the KenPom.com computer rankings are still playing in the NCAA tournament. Then there's number 19, LSU, and then there's number 28, Oregon. So Oregon is kind of the outlier in all this, which, one of the last teams into the tournament because, they won their conference tournament. They stole a bid. They got in. They're a 12 seed from a weak conference. So they're kind of the outlier. But the top 14 teams are all still remaining, and 15 of the top 19 are still remaining. The ones, the ones from the top 20 that didn't make it, Wisconsin, Iowa State, Kansas, Wofford, and Mississippi State. So the favorites are doing really, really well. So if you picked a lot of chalk, chances are you're doing well with your bracket right now. And I don't really know what to make of that. Part of me thinks it's what we've said all along, is that the bubble was so weak. The teams competing for those at-large positions were, those final at-large bids were just, not good. And we knew the mid-majors were kind of down as well. You know, we knew Murray State was pretty good. We knew Wofford was pretty good. We knew Buffalo was pretty good. But other than that, you know, there wasn't really much else to get excited about amongst those mid-major teams. And then, you know, Wofford's the only team that was inside the top 20. Buffalo at number 22 in the KenPom rankings. So, you know, maybe that's the explanation is, you know, we were right all along about these teams on the bubble competing for these at-large bids. They just weren't very good. There weren't many good teams in college basketball this year. So a lot of chalk still remaining in the NCAA tournament. So if you've been on favorites in your bracket, chances are you're doing very well right now. And then also, too, there haven't really been many close games either. I know Iowa, Tennessee, Duke, Central Florida, Maryland, LSU in the second round were some quality games. But there's been a bunch of blowouts, man. A bunch of blowouts. Michigan State blew out their opponent. Gonzaga had no issues. Florida State crushed Murray State. Texas Tech beat the pants off of Buffalo. Michigan had no issues. North Carolina had no issues. Kentucky-Wofford was kind of close. It wasn't really a good game. Purdue just absolutely kicked the crap out of Villanova. And then Virginia didn't really have any issues as well. So not a lot of close basketball games, really. I don't think that this NCAA tournament's been very entertaining. I think it's like the NFL. Gambling, you're always going to have some ratings because of the gambling aspect that goes on with these games. So when people push out these ratings for college basketball and say it's doing just fine, yeah, it's doing just fine right now because everybody's gambling on it. It's not doing just fine during the regular season and things like that when the bad product really, really shows. So, and two, you look at all these teams remaining, Michigan State, Cassius Winston, Duke, RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson, you know, Virginia, Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy, Purdue, Carson Edwards, North Carolina, Kobe White. There's a lot of really good guards still playing basketball. Jarrett Culver at Texas Tech. It's, you know, this is a guards game. You know, Tremont Waters at LSU. If you have good guard play, and you're pretty consistent on defense, you can win a lot of games in the NCAA tournament. I think that's showing right now as well. So hopefully we get some more entertaining games in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight leading up to the Final Four. But I do think it would be a really entertaining Final Four if it were all the one seeds, or even two, if the two seeds or even the three seeds came out of there. Purdue is legit. I've mentioned Texas Tech is legit. There's some really quality three seed teams that are still playing. Houston's a legitimate team that they're proving. So I do think that moving ahead, we're going to get some much better basketball games now that the competition is much more even. Like I said, the top 14 KenPom teams are still playing in 15 of the top 19. Oregon's the only outlier. So you should see some good basketball games here as we roll into the second week of the NCAA tournament. And with that, let's wrap up episode 33 of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeTheBloods.com. I hope you're back it. You're back it. Oh, man, it would help if I could pronounce a damn word. That's doing about as well as my bracket. So I hope your bracket is still in good shape and you haven't taken a lighter to it yet out of frustration. I hope that you're having a good week. Thank you for listening into the Drop and Dimes podcast at theyak.com. Get to theyak.com/Austin. Check out all of our great podcast content. And in the meantime, enjoy the rest of this NCAA tournament. We'll see if the Longhorns can go to New York City and keep playing basketball. I think that'd be pretty cool. I know it's the NIT, but, you know, Texas playing for something at Madison Square Garden would be, you know, pretty interesting, let's say, way to cover the end of the season. So until then, have a great week. Enjoy all the basketball that's ongoing and take care.